All right, great to have you back with us. Giants wrap up this four-game series with Arizona down at Chase Field. It'll be Anthony DeSclafani, Disco, on the hill for the Giants, and Caleb Smith, he is a left-hander for the Arizona Diamondbacks. The lineup is out. I'll just run through it quickly before Bruce joins us. Slater gets the lead off today, and boy, did he have the home run yesterday. Estrada second, Yastrzemski, then Posey, Ruff, Flores, Solano, Jalen Davis gets a start in Disco. So you've got 2, 4, 7 righties in there against Caleb Smith, who's given up 6 of his 7 home runs to right-handers. Bruce Jenkins, good afternoon. How are you? Happy 4th.
Yeah, happy 4th, Marty. I just shot a Roman candle from the sink to the refrigerator, so we got some excitement here.
You're off the couch.
I can't see through the window right now.
But you're off the couch. That's the main thing.
I am.
I'm impressed with that. But July 4th in baseball, Bruce, it is one of those markers. And, we can chat about it tomorrow as well. But it is one of those markers. And I looked this morning and I said to myself, if the Giants ever needed the second wild card, and who knows what's going to happen here. The Dodgers-Giants tied right now for first, and San Diego won today. They're 9.5 up in the second wild card, and this is July 4th. They're in really good shape.
Yeah, that's amazing. I was thinking before the season it would be nice if they came back with one more year of the expanded playoffs like they had last year. That wouldn't be that good permanently, but I thought maybe this year with the pandemic and a few other reasons it would be kind of cool and give the Giants a much better shot. But, I mean, here they are, with 52 wins. That's a pretty good marker at a time when you get things are starting to look. There's no flukes, there's no mirages right now. That's 82 games, and what a thing!
It's funny because this whole month will be the chatter about the trade deadline and what they need and what they should do and should they do this and that. And my position is, I don't think they're going to do anything. I think that they have created a team that they feel, look, it's the best team in baseball. They've got more wins than anybody in baseball, I think, other than maybe the Red Sox and Dodgers are right next to them right now. But they've created that team, and are you going to say, all right, we're going to trade for Starling Marte, put him in center field, and Duggar, we're going to send you to Toledo. I just don't see that happening. I think the team they have is the team that they're going to go with.
Yeah, well, that move you just suggested, I'd hate to see that too. I think you're right. They don't have to do anything, and they certainly don't want to give up a gem in the farm system for a pitcher, say, who might be a rental, or even if he's not a rental, but at the expense perhaps of their long-term future. And what an amazing position to be in. I think Farhan's going to be ready and will spend some money in the offseason, provided that there's a free agent out there that they really want and really wants to come here. But, right now, I'm like you. I wouldn't be surprised if they just keep it the way it is, because it's just going so well for so many reasons. And that's a great position to be in. There's certainly no desperation whatsoever.
No, and unless the bottom fell out, which pitcher out there would be better than DeSclafani or Gausman and Cueto and Wood together? And then you get Logan Webb coming back at some point. And, people talk about starting pitching, but who would you pull out of the rotation for who? And I just don't think the market's out there for anyone that they want.
Yeah, well, they're certainly not going to pull Cueto out, and it's nice to have a lefty in Alex Wood. That fifth starter is a little bit fluid, but if they could get Max Scherzer or Jose Barrios, yeah, those are tremendous pitchers. They could move right into the number three slot if not higher. But like you say, it's not impending. Gausman's going to be an all-star, and he won't be able to pitch because he's pitching on the Sunday prior to that, but there's talk maybe DeSclafani can come in there and replace him. He certainly has credentials.
Boy, it's interesting. This is now, July 4th. It's not Memorial Day. It's not the middle of April, and they've got 82 games down already, and they're in great shape. Ohtani, Sam Spear sent me a text just a minute ago. Says Ohtani hit another home run today. How about that?
It's like what's new, except he's got 31. Wait a minute. We talk about him every week because you have to. Everybody's talking about Ohtani every day. I mean, the amazing thing being that he just keeps blowing minds, and people are still just astounded by what he's doing. And I'm so glad that he's healthy. He's healthy enough to do both things right now, to pitch and to hit, and showing a little speed on the bases. But, what can you say about this guy? But it's so typical of the Angels that, you know, they've got this transcendent player that has people talking about Babe Ruth, and they're right around 500, and once again, they're going to be a disappointment. And I love Mike Trout, who's still away from coming back. They're going, well, you know, when you come back, you can be a DH. He goes, I think we've got that covered. I mean, who else is Mike Trout going to say that about, that he can't beat somebody out to be a DH?
Well, he's got the longest calf pull in Major League history. I forgot
about
it.
That's weird, isn't it? I mean,
what, 2 months?
He was just running the bases, and he pulls up, and then, you know, okay, you figure he's out for 10 days. I don't know, but that's very, very bizarre. And really, you know, that's a big blow to the Angels, but it's a shame.
Posey is going to start for the National League, and the All-Star talk is going to be coming up this week. And the Home Run Derby, are you a fan? Have they done anything to make it interesting enough for you to watch it?
Well, it's all about the personnel. I mean, this year, you know, I think Ohtani's going to be in it. I haven't really seen the rosters. I don't get very excited about it. And I have trouble watching it as long as Chris Berman's on it. Because it's back. Okay, we know that. We know it's back. Okay. It can be a lot of fun, depending. I mean, I still remember watching Cal Ripken and another year Mark McGwire just rhythmically snapping balls out of the yard, being there in person, you know, sitting on the first base side and just marveling at that. It could be a really good show. But, you know, if they get the right guys in there swinging from the heels, there's an awful lot of great candidates. I think it'll be fun. I don't think they have to fool around with the format. It's just a matter of getting the right people in there.
Well, they pick the right stadium, and they do change the baseballs. So can you imagine what's going to happen here?
Oh, it's going to be insane. I mean, pop-ups are going to be sailing out, and it'll be a colossal disappointment every time somebody hits like a line shot that hits the wall.
This is going to be something. All right, so we got that next week. We'll talk more about it and potential changes in the All-Star game. We fooled around with Ron Wotus on this question. I'll ask you this as well. Joey Chestnut, 76 hot dogs today. Raph says in 10 minutes. If there was a food eating contest for you, one of the foods that you like, what would you go in? Well, what food would it be?
I would go with peas, Marty, and I'd start with one and then see what the rest of the field is doing. I really have no intention of catching up to Joey Chest Pain, as I call him.
Okay. All right, Bill, go ahead. You can follow that one.
That's a good one. I don't know if I can follow that one, but that was pretty good. They just announced the reserves, Brandon Crawford, Kevin Gausman, of course, the starter, Buster Posey. You know, when you look at Crawford and Posey being in their 30s, Bruce, I mean, this is a great, great achievement for both of them, and they both have had great first halves of the season. Tell me what you think.
Well, it's a total dream scenario for the Giants. You know, considering how everyone felt in spring training, nobody knew if Posey was going to be anywhere near what he was, let alone as good as what he was. And, you know, I don't think anybody figured Crawford would be beating out the likes of, you know, Baez and, you know, Trey Turner, who is on the team, which is great. A great field of National League shortstops. Crawford, it's only because Tatis is just sort of out of this world that Crawford isn't starting the game. So it's just a great thing for the Giants, for their PR, for the fans, and but mostly for the team, the way those guys are anchoring this run for the pennant, and fantastic. You know, I think Longoria would have at least had a shot if he'd been healthy all year. I think he'd have a chance to get on that team too. So pretty wild.
Boy, you know, if you had pitching the way the All-Star game used to be, you'd start off with DeGrom. You'd bring in Scherzer in the fourth inning, and then you'd finish it up with Gausman, and I'll see you later. Schultz would say, then we'll hit the buffet.
There were many years, if you look back on the history of the All-Star game, where it was exactly like that, 3-3-3. That's your rotation for the All-Star game, and And you know, if you're into somebody like Koufax or Marichal, it was great. It wasn't like maybe eight pitches and you see you later. It's just not enough. But you know, then again, a lot of guys get in, so you can look at it both ways. But I do remember those days, and it was pretty good.
You know, one of the things we talked about yesterday was runners in scoring position, and sure enough, yesterday, 2 for 14, 13 of them left on base, and it just keeps rolling on. They just can't get a key hit. They can't even make contact sometime, Bruce and Marty. I mean, is there something that the Giants can do to alleviate this problem?
What do you think, Marty?
Stop hitting home runs.
Yeah. That's not
Slater. I wish Slater was nobody on.
Yeah, no, seriously. Just, you know, do what we've talked about. You know, you choke up a little bit. You go the other way. You try to. Now, of course, with all the shifting, you hit the ball up the middle. You're hitting it right at somebody. But,
yeah.
You know, you've got to take control of the plate where you use the bat to go the other way or hit the ball to the right side or hit a fly ball and just don't strike out, walk, or hit a home run. So I think it's the philosophy, Bill. I really do. I think if you look at the hitters when they come up, no one has that look of, hey, let me choke up and let me punch one into right field. They're all at the end of the bat trying to hit it out.
And it's a shame because they have guys who do think opposite way, Slater being one of them, you know, Posey. Longoria was great, you know, when he was healthy. Crawford will go that way. They have a lot of guys who – Solano, you know, who think the whole field. And I just think guys are going to be trying to do too much where they get in a situation where, hey, I can win this game or give us a chance to win it and maybe try to yank one out. And it's just not appropriate. But I don't think they're lacking the people who can do this. And I certainly don't think that the team philosophy is, when there's a guy on second, try to hit the ball out. I would hope not, but I think we'll see a change there, but maybe I'm a little too optimistic.
Yeah, well, I just don't – go ahead, Bill.
No, I was just going to say, you know, yesterday in a postgame show, Andrew Baggerly reported where Austin Slater was sitting next to Buster Posey, and he said that Buster said, hey, when you're jumping at the ball, when you feel like you're jumping and you're way ahead of it, think about hitting the ball to the first base side. Maybe even think about hitting it into the right field dugout, the first base dugout. And
yeah,
we know Slater does that, but you could see how much he was jumping yesterday in his first two at-bats. He hit a ball in the third base dugout he was so anxious to hit. But that's the mentality I think, Marty, you and Bruce are both saying. You got to think that way sometimes and go the opposite way. And these guys are so geared into hitting it into the shift instead of trying to make contact and go the opposite way. And I was just thinking about that yesterday when I was reading Baggerly's thing, and that's true. I think Buster does it even better than most of them.
Oh, he definitely does. I mean, he's got a real knack for you know, it's not a late swing. It's just seeing the ball just a split second longer, and doing what needs to be done with it. And when it does arrive low and away, he's more than ready to go to right field with it. He's not going to try to pull it and ground out horribly to third. You know, he's going to put it out there. And he's the perfect example for anybody in the dugout to listen to on that score.
You know, he's been needed for some power that he had early in his career to drive in some runs and, you know, be a 3-4 hitter. But if you took Posey and said, look, be the kind of hitter that you want to be and use the whole field, I think his lifetime batting average would be something like .330.
Mm-hmm. Wait, are you talking about Posey?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, you don't think he's been using the whole field his whole career?
No. I think he's pulled the ball a lot, and I think he's been called upon to do that. When he needs it, he can go up the middle or go to right field. I think he could almost do it at will.
But yeah, that's what I'm saying. Whether he does it enough, I don't know. But he really has a knack for that.
Yeah, I think so. And I think he's been a 3-4 hitter, and they've needed him for that power.
Yeah,
he's
that's
a right-handed
true.
Hitter. But I tell you honestly, I think we'd be looking at a guy with a lifetime batting average of .325, .330, something like that. I think he's that good. And this whole thing of getting this kind of season, boy, he needed it. And I tell you, in my personal opinion is, his Hall of Fame credentials are now sealed. I don't think he needs another year. I think coming back from the injury and showing everyone what he can do healthy and putting that together with what he's accomplished, I think that's sealed it for me.
No, man, absolutely. I'm glad to have a vote. And, you know, for years, one of the big criteria for me is if you're watching a guy and he strikes you as a Hall of Famer at the time and not in retrospect, you know, like sort of a Phil Niekro, Craig Biggio type, but somebody who is clearly, you know, ruling his position, if you get into the postseason, all the better. And, you know, running a pitching staff that's dominating the league, hitting big home runs and big hits. The postseason was absolutely that. And a couple of years had me wondering what other voters were going to do, because he, I know a lot of people came out and said, well, that's it, he's not going to be one. I didn't really waver on that. And what he's doing now does seal it, I think, in terms of the national viewpoint of Posey, because it's just really impressive. The fact that he's starting the All-Star game is extremely important in that regard.
And one thing, Bruce, what you said, it wasn't just the offensive numbers. You're looking at a 34-year-old that's hitting .327, a couple hundred at bats, but the defensive side. He's throwing runners out behind the plate. I love how he communicates with his pitchers. If he sees a slider not off the corner, he literally is pointing, throw it here so it breaks here. You see all the nonverbal things he does to the pitchers, as well as going out there, covering his mouth, and who knows if he's in their ear, if he's busting their hump. Come on, push it in. Get it going, you know, and that's what I like about him as a catcher. He's that captain behind the plate, and he's done a magnificent job, especially this year. I think he's handled his pitching staff so better than the other years he's been with them.
Yeah, and in the glory years, you can imagine, you know, the ingenuity and knowledge and talent it takes. You, one night you got Zito, then you got Lindstrom, then you got Bumgarner.
Yeah. I mean,
it's like three guys, they couldn't be any different, and he's just masterful. He sort of gets inside all everyone's head, and what is going to make him successful here? What's the right pitch? It's an underrated skill, but geez, when it's done well, it's just masterful.
Yeah, he's a pleasure. He's a Hall of Famer. Mm-hmm. And it's a pleasure to watch him. It really is. So, all right, a little history today. Dave Righetti, well, when I touched on this, Bill and I touched on it. The famous no hitter. It's one of the most famous in history. One of the most dramatic. The no-hitter on July 4th in Yankee Stadium on George Steinbrenner's birthday.
Well, it's so great because it was the 4th. It was the Red Sox. It was Yankee Stadium. Righetti's just kind of coming into his own. You know, the Red Sox, you know, they're coming out with Boggs and Rice and Dwight Evans, and I think Tony Armas is in their lineup. And it was amazing to watch. You know, he was the first Yankee pitcher to throw a no-hitter since Don Larsen. Mm. It, way back in 56, almost 20 years prior, 30 years prior. And that was a perfect game, of course. But, you know, for a Yankee pitcher to throw a no-hitter in Yankee Stadium, that's about as good as it gets. And it was, you realized how rare that it was. I reflect on Righetti because, you know, when they, you know, they had Gossage in relief, and Righetti was a tremendous starter. And he's looking at years and years of 20-win potential. And when he's 25 years old, they make him the closer. You know, which made some sense, and you know, he led the league in saves, and he was a great, great closer. But I know he didn't like that. He didn't make any kind of a stink, but he's thinking, you know, I can be a big time starter in this league for the Yankees, and the way he adjusted to it, and without making any fuss whatsoever, and now he's like a small third Eckersley. He's a hell of a reliever. What a thing!
Hall of Fame, possibly. What happened? Did it just he didn't have enough numbers in either one? But if he were concentrated on one, maybe a Hall of Fame career.
Well, he had a Hall of Fame arm without a doubt. I mean, it is. You know, if Eckersley hadn't gone to the bullpen, he wouldn't have any chance at the Hall of Fame. And Righetti, you know, like I say, he was 25 years old, so that kind of cut the cord on the starter thing. And you know, the relievers, he did have some great years, but, you know, you're measuring up against Gossage and Fingers and Suter and Quisenberry. And, you know, by the time he got to the Giants, which was only, I guess, in 1990, I think he signed with the Giants, you know, his arm wasn't the same. I mean, I think Rod Beck had that closer's job within about a year or so. And it just wasn't quite enough on either side. But I know I hope that he's really proud and satisfied with what he did, because he did it on the biggest stage in that circus atmosphere. I remember going into the locker room many times in the 80s, whether it was playoffs or just regular season, and there's always a bunch of stuff going on, and the writers are crowded around somebody, and it's just one controversy after another. And Rigetti was always this cool, calming voice, making good sense and with great perspective, a really, really good man. And, of course, when the Giants made him the pitching coach, that's one of the great coaching maneuvers of all time.
Boy, a good man. You know, it's funny, you use the example of the writers being around them. And, you know, we think here, you know, we have six or seven writers, eight writers, maybe on a good day with some of the calmness like yourself. There, they could have had 30 around them.
Just a madhouse. And, you know, half of them ask, really don't get it. You know, they don't get it like the really good writers anywhere. You know, if you're surrounded by a bunch of writers, there are going to be a few that are going to throw out these ludicrous questions. And, you know, you're trying to tie your tie and get the hell out of there, but you want to be civil. And meanwhile, inane questions are coming your way. And that's when you really respect somebody who can handle that. And but I remember thinking, if somebody just bailed, I'd go, yeah, I'd bail out of here too. I'd get away from this mob.
Boy, good. All right, Bruce, have a great July 4th. Enjoy it.
Thanks, Bruce. A million. Talk soon. Talk tomorrow.
We'll talk tomorrow. All right, we got the Cardinals tomorrow. That is a great Bruce Jenkins. Dave Rigetti, for you, Bill. I mean, you know him. You pitched in his ear. Did you ever go up?
He was in American League when I was in National League. But, you know, after that no-hitter, what I remember, it was so hot and humid in New York. You saw his socks all grimy, and he was just sweating. And then when he got the no-hitter, he hugs the catcher. And you could just see he gave everything he could in that game.
Yeah.
And it was just a remarkable game. I remember the game because we were watching it and checking it out because those were right in our clubhouse. And it was fun. It was fun back in that era. He was tough. He was a tough left-hander. And going to the bullpen, like Bruce said, that made his resurrection of his career because he was a top-line closer also.
1983. Boy, last out, Wade Boggs. How about that? Mm-hmm. All right. We've got a wonderful author coming up, Galen White. The book is The Best Little Baseball Town in the World. It's the Crowley, Louisiana Millers and Minor League Baseball in the 1950s. I thought it would be really appropriate on this July 4th weekend. So sit back. You're going to enjoy this one. We'll take a break and come back with Galen White right after this. KMBR 680-1045, the sports leader.